This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Steve Vincic. He's the Vice President of Global Security Solutions for Unisys. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Good morning, John. Doing well. How are you today?
What a title. I would never want that title. Global Security Solutions. Do you, like, hide under the bed at night and just scared what's going to happen? I mean, that's a pretty big title, isn't it?
Once in a while, yeah. You need to watch out for those security threats that come at you on a daily basis.
Yeah, and this isn't for Unisys. This is for Unisys customers all over the world. I mean, everyone knows Unisys has been around since forever, $4 billion in sales, very strong government presence, very strong commercial presence. So that's why I want to talk today. I wanted to get Steve in the studio and just talk in general. In the holiday season here, the end of the year, let's look at the big picture and say, well, you know, if you look at what's happened here in the last, you know, 12 months in 2011, you know, Sony's been hit, RSA's been hit, Citigroup's been hit, Google's been hit. There's been a lot of security attacks, and whether you want to admit it or not, it's a concern. And I think if you combine that with the government moving into the cloud, I think it's a time to maybe look at some of these aspects of security from the Unisys perspective and how you can help my listeners maybe make their lives a little safer and not have to worry about global security for Unisys. But first of all, tell me about your background, Steve, how you wound up with Unisys.
I've been with Unisys about 10 years. Came to Unisys focusing on some projects related to biometrics and the testing and evaluation of different biometric technologies. Before then, did some work for a biometric middleware company where we focused on developing different biometric solutions for online transactions. And then over the past 10 years with Unisys, have just focused on implementing security solutions for the federal government as well as some of our commercial clients globally.
So you're familiar with a lot of the terminology and a lot of the trends, what's going on here today?
Yes. Yep.
Oh, great. And doing research for this interview, I found out that of all the places in the world, Walt Disney World uses thumbprints to, oversee people coming and going from the park. I've never been there. That's amazing, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, they use it. It works well. It's to, you know, protect for their season pass holders so they don't hand it to someone else. And biometrics have really caught on over the last, really, 10 years. Is the past 2 years especially something where we've seen a lot of growth and interest because the biometrics are cheaper to implement and more reliable and more accurate.
Yeah, if you've read any recent history around 2003, 2004, there was a CEO from a large company called Savvis who was in a bar in New York, and he ran up a total of $240,000. Remember this guy?
I do, yes.
Yeah, and they had him because he had to give his thumbprint for each one of those tabs, and he said, I wasn't there. He said, buddy, we got your thumbprint, don't we?
That's right. It's not like you say you gave your password to someone else. You can't give your thumbprint to
someone else. No, unless you're in the movie Minority Report where they take out your eyes or something. Let's talk about this this website and this initiative that Unisys has, and it's called the Unisys Security Index. Tell me about it and what's the whole purpose behind it.
Sure. It's a security index report we've been doing twice a year since 2007. It's focused on the commercial or consumer-based implications around security, and then we look to see how we can relate those to help solve problems for businesses and governments with around protecting security for citizens, for example. The survey focuses on four areas. It looks at identity theft or personal security, internet security, physical security, or homeland security. And it focuses really on what are the consumer aspects or consumer concerns around those security issues.
But it's interesting that Unisys, typically, when I think of Unisys, I think of being in large organizations and what they call enterprise-level systems, whether they're commercial or federal. Yet this seems to be applying to a lot of regular citizens, regular folks in my neighborhood.
It absolutely does. What we've seen over the last several years is a trend towards the need to have increased security for just general consumers as they conduct transactions online, for example. The financial services industry has a tremendous amount of fraud in it, and consumers are victim of different types of financial fraud. And so they see a concern around that security issue, and they want to address it through different means. So that's a good indication for us to understand what types of solutions that the government or commercial enterprises need to implement to help protect those citizens.
You know, when Unisys deals with issues like cybersecurity, physical security, managed services security, identity solutions, these are really huge, big topics that we could take hours. Just cybersecurity alone is probably an eight-hour show. Let's just take one little aspect of this, and maybe our listeners are scratching their head. Maybe they're thinking about trusted identities and identity cards. You know, in 2010, Obama said, you know, we got to have some kind of strategy to be able to identify people on our systems. And I think this is where a lot of this impetus started.
That's right, and they released a document or a strategy called the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace, or NSTIC, and the focus of that document is to implement a private sector solution for enhanced identity online. The government's there to help kick it off and help get private enterprises started in developing solutions that consumers can use to protect their identity online. And it's around when you conduct a transaction, how do I know that it's you that's conducting that transaction, not someone else doing it?
And this originated with NIST, or where did it originate?
It is out of NIST today. It's been something that has moved forward over several years, but they finally outlined it into a pretty concise strategy, which is being taken now and implemented.
And, I mean, listeners know the figures. I mean, in here 2011, 11.7 million Americans were victims to ID theft, which if you read the other statistics, you find it costs thousands of dollars to recover if your ID is taken.
It does. And everybody either has been a victim, like you said, the high numbers there, or have known someone who's been a victim of identity theft. And once we understand it and we can personalize it, that's what impacts our perceptions of security online and how we conduct ourselves online. Especially with the increased use of mobile devices today. People are doing more with their mobile devices to conduct bank transactions or buy things from Amazon or other retailers online, and that increases the level of risk that they have.
You know, the figures are that 55 million tablets will be sold here in 2011. Where'd that come from? 2 years ago, I would have been to bet on that horse. I mean, out of nowhere, huh?
That's right. The tablet industry, just tremendous success over the last couple of years. But the interesting thing that I see in that trend is it's hot now for these 2 years, but what's next? And what type of security solutions can you implement or put in place that not only protect people from a tablet device of today or a mobile device of today, but the technology and uses they're going to have tomorrow in the next couple of years? What's that next big tablet idea that's going to come out?
Oh, I don't know who can predict that. I wish I knew. I have a friend whose mother survived Auschwitz. She's Catholic, and the whole Catholic family got thrown in Auschwitz because they were hiding Jews. She got out, and everyone else died. But he was raised in an environment that was very, very wary of any kind of ID systems. and I think that's what people think of when they think of trust identification and ID systems. And this is a very delicate balance I think you have to have for citizens or the federal government. Is at what point in time do you, can you respect the privacy rights of individuals with some kind of an ID system?
That's right, and certainly it's a global issue, and countries around the world look at it from different perspectives. And we've implemented national ID programs for example, the country of Angola, and we're doing Mexico right now, where over 120 million citizens will be enrolled in a biometric-enabled national ID system. And what we see in these different environments is some countries want to keep those biometrics stored on a card that person keeps, so it never gets stored in a centralized database. Or some countries are more amenable to that, where the people in that country said, that's okay if you store a biometric, because we understand that the issues far outweigh the privacy concerns.
And I think we've got to realize that Americans aren't the only ones on the planet who have these concerns. I mean, it's a global problem, and Unisys is a global company solving these problems all throughout the world.
That's right. And what we look to do is bring some of those commercial best practices into the federal government and implement, for example, biometric solutions that we've proven out in the field in the commercial environment, bring them into federal government space. the issue around biometrics and where they're stored in the United States, with the NSTIC strategy, one thing that they talk about is not having a centralized database and being able to either have that person, you know, maintain custody of their biometric information, or have private providers that you decide to trust hold that biometric information.
Interesting public-private partnership here.
It is, yeah. And I think that's really the only way that biometrics are going to be embraced in the U.S. today.
Is that part of the Center for Government Innovation with Unisys, or is that a separate project?
It is connected. So the Center for Government Innovation is focused on looking at the big ideas and big problems that the government face today and bringing in experts from industry, from government, and helping us figure out what direction should we head.
Great. When we get back, talk more about NSTIC and maybe even delve into cybersecurity. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Steve Vincic, Vice President of Global Security Solutions with Unisys.
Hockey season is in full swing.
Doesn't get better than that.
The Caps are hard at work. Can you feel the excitement building? Caps fans, head to Verizon Center and ring in the new year when the Caps take on the Calgary Flames on Tuesday, January 3rd. Tickets are extremely limited, so call 202-397-SEAT or log on to washingtoncaps.com/singleticks and do your part in building America's hockey capital.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
The job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview.
Yeah.
And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
With the new year comes resolutions, when we resolve to stop snacking and slacking, resolve to start reading and running. This year, resolve to help someone else too. Resolve to support the American Red Cross, because the Red Cross provides hope, help, and compassion, not only during disasters, but every day. Resolve to do something that means something. Support the American Red Cross before the new year. Visit redcross.org today.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Howard Hayes is the acting CIO for the Indian Health Service. He says the agency's move to new diagnosis codes called ICD-10 will cause his office to do some heavy lifting.
We have to modify the database on the back end to incorporate the ICD-10 codes and have the various applications be able to read and write those codes. But at the user interface level, we have to make changes that will support the coding that gets done.
Whether your organization calls it cloud, utility computing, managed services, or capacity services, at the core is the rapid provisioning of information technology infrastructure. At Vion Corporation, they pioneered capacity services 10 years ago. Vion was awarded the first and currently holds the largest federal government capacity services contract. They provide government IT owners an agile financial vehicle for meeting mission-critical IT needs. Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been delivering IT solutions to the government for over 31 years. Visit Vion.com to learn more.
In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly 1 in 3 children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov, brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
Register today for Affirm's luncheon on Friday, January 13th, and hear from the new U.S. CIO, Stephen Van Roekel, in a fireside chat with Affirm President and CIO from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Darren Ash. In his first major address inside the Capitol Beltway, Van Roekel will discuss the role of technology in closing that widening productivity gap between government and industry. That's January 13th at the Sofitel Hotel, McPherson Square, from 11:30 to 1 p.m. This briefing is sure to be a sellout, so register today, Affirm.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio we have Steve Vincic, Vice President of Global Security Solutions for Unisys. Kind of a big, huge topic. We're going to try to chop it up into maybe digestible chunks here. And the first part of the program we talked about NSTIC. And let's talk a little bit more. So what exactly is it? And so NIST comes up with these guidelines for commercial companies to come up. Is this like the public key infrastructure? Is that a parallel there? What's it similar to?
You could look at, if you understand PKI or public key infrastructure, and probably it's a very difficult concept to really understand. So simplifying it around the identities and how we manage people's online identities is really the focus of NSTIC. It's around being able to, when I conduct a transaction online, prove that it's Steve Vincic that's doing that transaction through the use of a biometric, for example, or other more secure methods than just a simple password.
Now, passwords can be changed if there's trouble. What if there's trouble with a biometric? Can that be changed, or how does that all work?
So the great thing about biometrics is you can't reverse engineer it once it's been stored in a database. It stores it in a series of ones and zeros that if you take it out of, you look in that database or get a hold of it, you can't take it out and reconstruct the image. So once a person is enrolled in that system, there's no way for someone to make a copy, basically, of their biometric information.
But if there's an issue, you can't, you can change your password if you forget it. If your system is compromised, you can't change that biometric information at all, can you?
Well, you can't change your biometric information, but as far as systems being compromised, there's ways to manage that so that doesn't happen. Examples, again, of you store the biometrics on a smart card that the person keeps. And so they had total control over that biometric information.
It goes beyond two-factor authentication, doesn't it?
It does.
It's much more secure. And two-factor authentication traditionally has been very, very solid. RSA was hit this year.
That's right. And so that's why we need to look at different ways to provide protection online for different levels of security. So RSA may have been hit this year, and that could happen to anyone, to be quite honest, because if a hacker really wants to get in somewhere, they're going to do it. And so what you need to do is look at how do you protect yourself online and then how do you protect the data that's online.
Switching from these big, huge topics from, personal identification systems to border crossings. I mean, Unisys has got their fingers in all kinds of different organizations and areas. So tell me more about El Paso and some of the work you've done there to help, secure the crossing.
Sure. At Unisys, we like to focus on mission-critical security solutions, and that's why you'll see us in different areas from national ID systems to border crossings to cybersecurity solutions. And around border crossing with Customs and Border Protection, one thing we did in partnership with them was to deploy the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative solution. This was a government-mandated solution based on the 9/11 Commission that needed to be deployed, and we deployed it on time, on budget, and it was deployed at all inbound vehicle lanes on the northern and southern border.
And it was license plate number identification, what was it?
We used different technologies. We used license plate reader identification systems. We used RFID systems to be able to capture an RFID-enabled WIDI compliant card is what it's called. So it could be a passport with the RFID chip in it or a separate border crossing card that has an RFID chip in it.
And all the new passports have those chips, don't they?
They do.
Yeah,
right.
No, that's interesting. When I think about security and border protection, you really can't, you can't just dismiss that border security stops with land. It's also up in the air. So is there cargo security as well that Unisys is involved in another whole world?
There is, and that's something where we work on the commercial side as well as in the federal government around protecting air cargo and looking at air cargo security solutions. And so, for example, on the commercial side, we have a logistics solutions that manage roughly 30% of the world's air cargo. And it's basically a middleware B2B solution that freight forwarders can connect into and look at the space that's on a particular airplane and then reserve that space to ship cargo from point A to point B.
I was just thinking the last time I was in El Paso. In the 1970s, I took a train from El Paso to Mexico City for $10. I don't even believe that, but that's how cheap things used to be years and years ago as far as traveling in Mexico. And you know, I think the security concerns have ramped up drastically in the last 30, 40 years. But if we want to take Unisys, and I don't think of Unisys when I think of air security or El Paso. I think of it in the cloud. And, you know, you can't pick up a federal publication without getting hit with the cloud, and the cloud this, and Obama says the cloud, and the cloud that. Well, there's security issues involved in cloud as well, aren't there?
There's tremendous security issues around the cloud, around data protection, where your data is stored, who owns it, how do you access it, how do you prevent other people from accessing it, and how do you manage, again, kind of going back to identities, how do you manage different identities among different systems, from private clouds that might be in the government space, and then you look at public clouds as well. You want to manage that same identity so people don't have to always log in with different usernames and passwords each time they want to look at a document that might be stored in a different cloud infrastructure.
Maybe you can give us a quick definition of FedRAMP and what it means for Unisys, what it means for our listeners, and how FedRAMP impacts security for the cloud.
So FedRAMP is a great strategy around having repeatable solutions that multiple agencies can leverage to get into a cloud infrastructure environment. And the ability to have those solutions that are repeatable or reusable within different agencies, have them certified so that they're already accredited solutions and allows agencies to more quickly get into a cloud infrastructure. So following that cloud-first priority, FedRAMP will allow them to do it a little bit easier.
And it's a GSA offering that other agencies can get from the GSA, is that right?
That's right.
Interesting. What's this concept called FICAM? Is that something with FedRAMP, or is that completely different?
It is connected, and that's around the identity management aspect of it, and how do we handle identities in the federal space. And so, again, we kind of see where this is all connected here, and it all resolves around either the user identity or the data that we're protecting, and how do we interact with those two. And so the FICAM is really around how do we create secure identities for people, how do we leverage that so they can be used across different platforms, from physical security to access facilities to cybersecurity to log into your computer or conduct transactions online.
Last year I had a fellow from the Smart Card Alliance on the air. And I'm sure they have a strong statement as far as using card verification for what he called interoperability, going from one agency to the next. I mean, this has got to be a big concern. And these two different fighting areas, these people getting together, what do the Smart Card Alliance say about some of these initiatives as far as FICAM goes and NSTIC?
They see it as a really connected space and a lot of connective tissue there between identity cards as well as proving your identity. And we're, from a card perspective, we're always going to have cards. We're always going to have the need for them because as we go into facilities, you have to have some way of showing on your person that you're supposed to be there. And people most easily recognize that through having an ID badge that you wear on the outside. So why don't we enable that ID badge to do a lot more than just show your picture to people? And that's where the Smart Card Alliance is working with the FICAM efforts and a lot of other efforts in the federal space to leverage the capabilities of smart cards today to have enhanced security.
And is NSTIC part of that security, or are these separate concepts?
NSTIC certainly plays right in the middle of all that, and it's looking at different ways to NSTIC goes beyond maybe just smart cards and looks at ways at on for conducting safe and secure transactions online. And so NSTIC may, in one example, there may be a need for a smart card to do that. In other examples, it may just be a biometric that's used to authenticate a person. Or it may be something like an out-of-band password that's sent, a one-time password that if you log in and want to approve a transaction, it'll send a one-time password to your cell phone, and then you have to enter that in order to approve the transaction.
Interesting. When we get back, we're going to talk more about the cybersecurity from a very high level with Unisys. We're going to talk about telework and how telework has important connection to ID and ID management, and more about trusted identity. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Steve Vincic, Vice President of Global Security Solutions from Unisys, talking about big, huge security issues.
You download the free application for your iPhone or iPad or Android smartphone, and then you go to their network, and then it knows all of the infrared codes for these things, and it's got the programming for 500 models. And then once you download the specific details for the model of the equipment that you have, this remote control will control everything.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
Here's Frank Konechny, the CTO of the U.S. Air Force, on the Federal Executive Forum on Emerging Technologies, sponsored by EMC.
As we come out with more devices, we have to be able to send the data to that device. And so what you're going to see someone is more of an IP cellular network in the sky, where we're all going to interlink with each other. But again, security, data, big data, quick response time, and the devices are all key essential elements that we are going to see in the future.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Virtualization delivers big benefits, but traditional storage and backup can't handle the increased demands of virtual environments. Get on track with EMC Next Generation Unified Storage and Backup, optimized for VMware. Run virtual applications 3 times faster and reduce VMware backup times by 90%. Streamline with VM management and single-step restores. Decrease application storage by 50% and reduce backup storage by 40 to 60 times. EMC products available on GSA through government acquisitions.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies. And your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
If you are facing advanced illness or the end of life of a loved one, peace of mind is in short supply. Fortunately, pain-free comfort care is available from the Washington Home and Community Hospices, a not-for-profit organization with a holistic team of doctors, nurses, caregivers, social workers, chaplains, and volunteers. The team comes to you in your home or wherever you call home in D.C., Montgomery, or Prince George's County. For your peace of mind, call them day or night for a complimentary consultation at 866-234-7222.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does 3 decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
Here's your chance to get out for some fun. Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News.
Head over to the Gaylord National and see the ice spectacular. You're seeing sculptures that were created from 2 million pounds of ice. You can even slide down a 20-foot ice slide, and I can tell you from experience that's quite a deal. You can check out the buy one, get one free deal on tickets to ICE, but also you can get some great deals on packages at the Gaylord National with some special pricing for residents of Maryland, D.C., and Virginia. Look at page 44 of the December Recreation News. Then call and ask the Gaylord folks for the special deals, especially those that apply to the residents of Maryland, Virginia, and D.C.
Now, what about the ski resorts this time of year?
Wisp in Western Maryland has a Midweek Madness package that starts at $59. And Canaan Valley Resort in West Virginia also has special holiday packages that you can take advantage of.
Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News. I'm Ruben Gomez.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Steve Vincic, Vice President of Global Security Solutions for Unisys. We're going right down the checklist here. We talked about everything from cybersecurity to identity solutions, and I want to take this identity solutions from my listeners. You know, one big push in 2011 here with Obama is telework. And I understand how it saves gasoline and it can make people more efficient. But what good is telework unless they can have some kind of validation of who is tapping into what cloud? This is exactly where NSTIC fits in a lot of these initiatives, isn't it?
It is, and that's one of the biggest concerns or drivers around being able to implement telework solutions. Everybody wants to do it, but the first question that's asked is, how is it secured? And the issues run from how is that end user authenticating themselves to how do we make sure we have a trusted system at the teleworker site, if it's at home, how do we make sure that their laptop or desktop is trusted and secure? And then how do we make sure those transactions or the data that transfers between the end user and the data center, how do we make sure that's secure? And there's a lot of different pieces that you have to kind of check off to make sure that it's going to be a solution that the government wants to use. And from the first perspective is around the user and validating the user. So, again, tying it back to NSTIC a little bit, or probably more appropriately maybe even FICAM guidelines, around having a smart card that's maybe it's an HSPD-12 compliant smart card that a user has to insert into their system. They use a PKI certificate to authenticate that device, and then they use a one-time password or a biometric to authenticate themselves. Then you need to have a trusted system. So we don't. The worst thing we want to do is have a trusted user on a compromised system, because then the bad guys will be able to get access to a lot of information they shouldn't. And so there's ways. In Unisys, we have a solution we call Stealth, which is on a USB drive and allows users to remotely connect securely from a secure operating system. Basically, every time they boot up, it's a secure operating system, and there's no way to compromise that because it's, in essence, a read-only type of system. So all the activity, all the data is stored back at the data center.
And Unisys Security Index has done surveys with consumers, and this is obviously a concern. And the Security Index actually has been around since about 2007. And what they do is they rate, they do surveys, and they rate from 0 to 300 on different concerns like being able to telework.
That's right. And this past survey, we've seen actually the highest levels of concern in the United States around security than since the survey began in 2007. And a lot of it we've seen driving is around the Sony hacks and the other big incidents that have occurred over this past year, plus the Middle East uprising. There's just been a lot of tension around security and the concerns around how does the government protect against nation-state-sponsored cybersecurity attacks, or you have your hacktivists that just want to decide that they have a mission and a reason to hack something, and so they're going to try and do that. And so all those forces driving down on the federal government, we have to look at how do we protect that. And there's the consumers are saying that, we're willing to do more to protect our own identities, but we expect more from government and commercial services that we expect them to do more to secure themselves as well.
I would imagine that the Security Index could be used by my listeners to get a pulse on what's going out there in the real world. I mean, rather than, talking with your neighbors and flipping a coin, having lunch with someone like you, you may get a distorted opinion if you have a limited sample. But the Security Index, it's pretty wide-ranging. And in fact, the people who do the surveys, it's not Unisys. You hire a third party to have at least some validation. So it attempts to be objective.
That's right. And we do this survey in 12 countries around the world. We get a good pulse of how the consumers feel about security. And one of the really interesting things that came out of this last survey was around the use of mobile devices in conducting transactions online and what consumers would do if they found out their data was compromised by a company that they're doing business with. And over 50%, well over 50%, would actually leave that company and go to a different business and do business with them. So if it was a bank or a financial institution that had compromised data, they would go to a different bank that was providing more security or more secure services. And we see this as a trend that's increasing over this past year, really, around that. And again, they also feel that they're responsible as well for security and are willing to do more, like use biometrics or use stronger authentication to conduct those transactions.
And from a federal perspective, if you're sitting over at HHS or the folks up in Baltimore, CMS, and you're trying to generate, let's say, medical information, a citizen may not want to give medical information overnight unless they're pretty much secure that the information they give is not going to be wind up in the wrong place. So I think it has the direct application for my listeners, the federal IT folks, who are trying to figure it out. Okay, CMS, you got to do this survey, and you have to have a population, and suppose they're resistant to give information. Well, the resistance is going to drop if you can assure them, no, look, we've done this everywhere. We've done this in Malaysia. We've done this in Brazil. Got the T-shirt, and it works.
That's right. And it's really in the federal government space around citizen services. And so from healthcare or health records information to IRS and tax record information or Social Security Administration, there's, you know, the legacy way of doing things today, which is a lot through mail still, because we haven't been able to have that trusted transaction online. But if we have more trust in the end user that we know who they are, and we have trust that the government is doing the right things to secure their infrastructure, then we're going to see an influx of consumers wanting to conduct and wanting to use more citizen services online.
And if the federal government can save money by providing services online like electronic health records, well, you know, costs are going out of control. You'd never think that a security solution would help reduce costs, but it's a direct part of the puzzle that helps reduce costs is citizens are going to be less resistant to use a system that can save the federal government money on collecting health data.
That's right. It's a tremendous opportunity to save money, and it's really in line with a lot of the cloud-first initiatives or all the other first initiatives that are out there. It allows the government to do something quickly, provide security, enhance security, and then see an immediate or a very near-term financial benefit out of doing it.
It's strange. We had the folks in here from vaccines.gov. And we talked about how they designed their website, which is pretty innocuous. And they did a survey. They found out that most of the people who wanted information from vaccines.gov did not have desktop computers. They had handheld machines. And so they optimized their site for the handheld devices. Who knew?
Yeah.
I never would have guessed that. And so people have handheld devices, and they're getting information. If they have to give medical information, well, they're going to be a lot more wary than most people would. So it's just, we're right in the middle of this big sea change of, you know, the way you did things 3 years ago, John, throw that out the window. It's overwhelming us.
That's right. And handheld devices today are just so powerful, and people wanting to do more transactions through those devices, they're always at their side. They always have it with them. And now this, again, is you know, the sea change is also, we talk about biometrics from that perspective, because with these handheld devices, they all have cameras. So you can do face recognition, and you can obviously use voice recognition. So two very low-cost, very effective biometric solutions that can be leveraged for citizens to conduct services with the government in a secure manner.
Is there a consideration to all the malware that's infected a lot of Android devices and the malware that's infected Windows? Because like Windows is the old Android. It's like, you know, now we have malware in both of these, and other systems don't seem to have that. Is that a concern?
There certainly is a concern around these devices in general, and I wouldn't just limit it to the, you know, one operating system or another. They're all going to have their different quirks and different concerns. And so when we look at designing and developing solutions to work on mobile devices, we really focus on the data and how is that data being secured. So even if that device was compromised, how can we make sure that we've developed an application that's not going to allow any interaction with other applications on that device, or not, and it's not going to store data on that device. And so once we do that, we take the device out of the picture, and it's almost, you know, device agnostic, and we just focus on how are we protecting the data.
It's booting from the thumb drive in an isolated environment where the malware is sitting over a sandbox somewhere. You don't care about the malware because everything you're doing is separate from that, like a big brick wall.
That's right. Yep, a pure kind of end-to-end security approach where we look at securing the user through strong identification. We secure the device, whether it's through the thumb drive or other security measures. We secure the applications to make sure they don't store unencrypted data anywhere. And then we encrypt the communication back to the data center to make sure that once it gets there, it's there in its original properly secured manner.
Putting the cloud in working boots. There's a new motto for Unisys. We put the cloud in work boots. Well, it kind of does because it allows you to remotely connect without the security concerns you may have had 3 or 4 years ago. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about some practical aspects and maybe some technology considerations for our guest, and then talk about where Unisys is going to head in the next 4 or 5 years, what kind of opportunities it sees, and maybe talk about the future of some of these initiatives like NSTIC. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Steve Vincic, Vice President of Global Security Solutions for Unisys.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Look for agencies to rely more on HR University this year. They don't have a lot of money to train staff. HR University is filling the gaps by allowing agencies to share courses online that are vetted by subject matter experts. It's a project of the Chief Human Capital Officers Council, but it's not just for human resources staff. Department of Veterans Affairs officials say their version of online training helped them save $200 million in turnover costs.
These are hard times for federal employees. A multi-year pay freeze, rumors of furloughs, and discussions on reducing benefits are the realities that all federal employees face. Now, more than ever, it's important to find ways to save your hard-earned money. One way is with life insurance from WEPA. WEPA offers lower rates and a premium refund policy that's returned over $58 million to its policyholders since 1996. To learn how much you can save, visit WAEPA.org. Once again, that's WAEPA.org.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
Dashboards are all the rage on federal websites these days. At the Federal Communications Commission, they're letting website visitors create and customize their own. The MyFCC tool is still in the beta testing stage, but the idea is to let users choose from a menu of widgets to tap into the FCC's most commonly requested data sources to build a custom dashboard. And the FCC is letting users log in with credentials from third parties like Google or Facebook, so they have one fewer password to remember.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Your new Cocker Spaniel is waiting to meet you, and you don't have to travel very far. This weekend and almost every weekend, Oldies But Goodies Cocker Spaniel Rescue holds at least one adoption show in the greater D.C. area. Find out where we'll be this weekend by checking out CockerSpanielRescue.com. Stop by to meet the many homeless Cockers of all ages who are looking for their new home. These dogs have already been spayed or neutered and have all their shots. For more information on adoption, fostering, or volunteering, visit CockerSpanielRescue.com.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Please join me this week for my special guest, Paul Pagnotto of the Pagnotto Carp Group of Hightower Advisors. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area. If you'd like to get in touch with us, visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
My family struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy. here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Steve Vincic, Vice President of Global Security Solutions from Unisys. We've been surfing these big, huge topics for the last, 35, 40 minutes. Talked about identity solutions, some physical security questions. And this is a point in the show where I get out the crystal ball and I say, okay, guest of mine, okay, Steve, what's going to happen with all this? And what's going to happen, you think, with this whole NSTIC initiative? Is this going to get traction? Or what if it does get traction? What's going to happen in the next 2 or 3 years? How does it play out?
My crystal ball is telling me, I think that the NSTIC is really, it will make some traction, and because I think it's the right timing. You know, 10 years ago, biometrics weren't prime time and weren't ready to really make a move in the industry from a consumer or government perspective. So many advances over those past 10 years in understanding how biometrics work, and then all the technologies that are available now to allow consumers to use different biometrics, plus the interest in the federal government to help address this situation, help advance the NSTIC approach, are just converging at the same time. And so I think, you know, the NSTIC has a 3-year plan of moving this out and making it really a public-private partnership. But then at the end of those 3 years, it's really a privately run enterprise. And so enterprises that want to get in the business of providing authentication services to citizen services for government, they can enroll the public in their system, have some trusted way to verify that biometric information, and then conduct those transactions through them in order to conduct the transactions with the government or with private enterprises.
It may be one of the keys to deploying electronic health records and saving so much money in the next 5 years where they don't have much choice. They have to look at every single consideration out there. Steve, there's some people who are listening wondering if he's, you know, this guy really a nerd. Does he really have all his technical stuff down? So I got to ask you my patented nerdometer questions here. Just 10 simple questions for the listeners so they get to know you. What was the year of your first computer?
1979.
79. That's some good nerd points. That's bragging rights there. Yeah, that's pretty good. I know what the computer's like in 79. They were pretty junky. Year of your first cell phone?
96.
It's not bad.
Yep.
Didn't have one in your trunk in 1972, at least.
No,
or took up all your trunk, yeah. Your operating system at home, Mac, Unix, Windows?
All of the above.
Ooh, the Unix gets points. We know that.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
That's important. And any kind of fancy home connection, just like a Fios or DSL?
Oh, yeah, Fios, absolutely.
Okay. And type of mobile phone you use? Smartphone, I assume.
Smartphone, okay. Yep.
And it's Apple?
iPhone, yeah.
And how many apps do you have downloaded?
I'd say I have about 20 of my own. However, with the new iCloud system, my daughter has an iPhone as well, so I get all her apps as she downloads them on mine. So I think I have about 70.
You get credit for 20, Buster. That's not bad, though. And do you have a tablet device?
I do, an iPad.
Ooh, you're getting very, very high in the nerd scale here. Social networking sites, which one do you participate in?
LinkedIn and Facebook.
Mm-hmm. And the last book read was electronic or paper?
Paper. Steve Jobs.
Well, you're doing so well. You're doing so well up until the end there, and then you blew it. And you don't have, 2 million Twitter followers?
No. Twitter is something I haven't caught on with yet.
You know, Kara Swisher wrote for the Washington Post when I was writing for those folks, and she has 700,000 followers, and she's a tech columnist. I mean, it's amazing that many people would follow someone and learn about technology like, you know, big data and government security. And I'm stunned at that whole Twitter usage. But pretty respectable nerd score here. I'll have to take this into my Unisys computer and figure out exactly the correct number to the 5 digits to find out if you're a card-carrying nerd or not. So where do you see Unisys heading in the next 4 or 5 years here? More active in the federal government, more active in overseas adventures? I mean, global security means so many different things to so many people.
Yeah, and certainly we have a committed effort towards federal government services, and we focus on 4 areas, from security to application modernization to data center work and then end-user services. And those 4 areas we see as the areas that we are experts in and have really the best capabilities to deliver mission-critical systems to the government as well as the commercial sector.
So still the emphasis on mission critical.
Absolutely. And mission critical can mean many different things. It's mission critical in the government sector, as well as there's commercial sector mission critical solutions that we deploy, like the air cargo solutions we talked about earlier. And what we like to do at Unisys, because we have such a strong commercial business as well as federal business, is leverage our commercial services best practices and solutions and apply them to government problems. Because the government is looking for faster ways to market that's less expensive, that'll give them immediate benefits.
So we know that the growth of mobile devices is going to increase. Well, where does Unisys stand as far as managing security of mobile devices?
Mobile devices is just proliferating tremendously. And we've, over the years, done a lot of work around managing mobile devices, primarily when they were Windows-enabled mobile devices. But now with multiple operating systems, from BlackBerry to iOS to Droid, we see this as a trend that's moving forward. And from a management perspective and security perspective, we look at our approaches as device independent, because next year there's going to be the next hottest thing out there, and we're going to have to make sure we support that as well. So when we look to support solutions, we look again at kind of, you know, making sure we can identify the person, making sure that the transactions that are conducted are secure, and making sure that the applications we develop for these mobile devices are developed securely and provide real ease of use. You know, with the days of mobile devices, people want the one or two clicks to conduct a transaction. And that's what we take into account when we develop these applications and solutions on mobile devices.
It's almost like an ecosystem, huh?
It really is.
Yeah. You know, I know some CTOs in town, and one of them in particular did not get a degree in computer science. He got a degree in ecology and systems. And that was his strength. And then he started learning coding. And guess what? He's very, very good at understanding how systems can, guess what, interact and how an ecosystem has strengths and weaknesses. And it's just an interesting perspective on this whole idea of managing mobile devices and ecosystems. Just want real quickly before we end here, RSA, they were hit pretty hard this year. Did that really upset your apple wagon? Was this a major – I mean, I know so many lawyers in town who have the RSA fobs, and they think they're as secure as secure can be. I think there's long-term serious problems with RSA, and there's some question marks there.
Well, again, going to what we talked about a little earlier, we look at all these solutions as having potential vulnerabilities. And how do you manage that when a vulnerability happens? How do you manage your data protection issues? How do you classify your data so you put more than multiple security solutions around it, kind of layered security approaches to protect that most important data? So if something like an RSA secure ID hack happens, or there's, been examples where some digital certificates from trusted authorities have been compromised. You don't rely on just that one measure. And if you layer your security and properly kind of segment or protect that data, that's the way that we look at how to properly secure an environment. And that's one of the things that we've done recently with the GSA when we did a transformation of their email system to a Google-based system in the cloud. There was a tremendous amount of work that went into driving that transformation and making sure it went off with a hitch. This was really the first government cloud push to Google, and there was a lot of eyes on what we were doing. And so when we deployed the solution, A, we wanted to make sure that it worked flawlessly, and then B, we wanted to make sure it was secure.
With layered security. Yeah, I didn't see anything in the front page of the Washington Post. GSA tech chief jumps out of window. I mean, I could have seen that. I mean, we've seen it before.
Absolutely.
We can talk about projects in the FBI that cost hundreds of millions of dollars that failed.
Right.
I mean, this was a very, very substantial investment in email that Unisys handled, and I don't see it. That's the best kind of project I like. No one talks about it, makes a transition, there's no burps.
That's right. My best day in running security operations is when I don't get a phone call.
Yeah, and your phone's on,
right.
But you don't get any calls. Well, great. Thanks for coming in. We're going to have to end our interview here, kind of a wide-ranging interview, everything from physical security in the border to cloud security to NSTIC and looking into the future where Unisys is going to be headed with the federal government. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Steve Vincic, Vice President of Global Security Solutions for Unisys. Thanks, Steve.
Great. Thanks, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.